and welcome to The Underground, the official podcast partner of Glee 2025. I'm Phil Wright, and together with my co-host Kate Turner, we took our podcast booth to the Glee show in Birmingham to capture a snapshot of the industry and take the pulse of what's going on in the garden sector right now. As well as recording 20 interviews, Kate and I ventured out of our recording booth to gain some insights from exhibitors on the show floor. What do a self-proclaimed plant promoter and an avid bird watcher have in common? They show that Glee reaches far beyond the shores of the British Isles. Michael Perry, also known as Mr. Plant Geek, finds himself travelling around the world to discover new and exciting plants destined for the UK market. His future plant stand at Glee this year showcased over 100 new plants. And Paul Oliver, who runs a chain of bird care centres, travelled from Canada to discover new innovations and partners at this year's show. I'm delighted to say that we're here with Michael Perry. Welcome, Michael.
You guys, I love you guys, honestly.
Oh, we love you.
You just are, honestly, mutual love club.
So, Michael, you've recently settled on the term a plant promoter to describe yourself. What does that title actually mean? And how does it differ from an influencer or a writer or a plant hunter?
Yeah, good question. It's really funny because the way that I probably talked similar to you about this before, but kind of like the way I run my career is I just follow it very much on instinct and let's see what's happening. And sometimes you don't realize what's happened until it's happened. That sounds crazy, but do you know what I mean? And like, and so for a few years, I kind of like, I'm kind of like a presenter, but I'm also then a product developer. Then I was like, kind of like, I don't know. And I just suddenly in the last kind of year or so, I kind of felt I'm promoting and I'm kind of promoting plants. And mostly in everything I do is something that comes down to plant promoter because I'm not really a gardener. Do you know what I mean? I'm not kind of day-to-day gardener and I'm not really a houseplant expert necessarily. It's kind of those, they're niches that I sometimes get kind of like put into. But really I'd say the overriding job title, I guess, is plant promoter because I do work with a lot of big breeding companies across Europe to then, you know, create content around their plants. When I'm here at Glee, obviously plant promoter, putting together future plants. I was at the Green Is Life in Poland, like plant promoting, you know, pulling together new, different, unusual plants from the show, creating a display with those. And yeah, the podcast, plant promoter, Substack, plant promoter. So that's it really. And
yeah, I
think,
love it.
I don't know if I'm the first of his kind or not. I made my own niche there somehow. But
I think you're the first with that title. So how do you decide if a plant is promotion worthy? What criteria do you use?
Oh, that's a nice question. The example would be two Fridays ago, being at Eden's Creations in the Netherlands, which is a heather breeder and nursery, which is really interesting. They do a lot of conifers as well because that obviously fits into the same kind of like a growing schedule. And we were having this tour and they had this little spore from a Seamus aparus from L. woodyi, and it looks like a euphorbia cactus.
Oh, I saw
it
that.
It's amazing. Oh my gosh. And I don't think they really realized the potential of it. And it's just when a plant looks so distinctly different and you just know how to answer this. You just know it's something that gardeners will get excited about, but something that also non-gardeners will get excited about. That is really the magical plant to promote because that is it. And if you look back to something like the Tomtato or the Egg and Chips plant, that was of interest to not just the gardening customers, but also the non-gardeners. And that is where El Paso, Seamus aparus, really kind of ticks the boxes. So I'd say primarily, it's looking for new, exciting, different plants. Not always about new genetics. It's also about looking at things with new eyes as well. So, and I would say also it could be about plants that you know are a benefit to then the grower, something that is then grown more efficiently. Color breaks is obviously always really important. Something that's just that can be used in a different way as well. You know, I've had this idea recently about having bonsai in window boxes. Because it can be done. Because think about, where is a bonsai happiest?
Outside.
Of course, it needs its roots restricted, but there's no reason why we can't keep them in their original containers, grow them in a window box, underplanted with something frothy. You know, I don't know. I'm always looking for different ways to do things with things we already know. Phalaenopsis, you know, this new trailing type one, the Navara, from Antura. You could have that outside in a half basket on the wall in the summer.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, okay. Why not? Yeah, we grow spider plants outside in hanging baskets.
Exactly. So I'm always this, it's just, yeah, plants that are new, different, unusual, but also new ways to use plants we already know. I'm just really, I guess I'm a plant promoter, but my strap line is I'm just getting excited about plants. That's it.
And you can tell that.
Yeah. Oh my God, I've just got the best strap line. I'll wet my plants.
That's it. Even the original.
So, Michael, you frequently traveling worldwide looking at plants destined for the UK. You just mentioned one there, which looked a bit like a cactus. Are there any other examples that you recently discovered that you think, wow, that is just amazing and I haven't seen anything like it?
It's really interesting. I guess I see my role as, it's not necessarily that I'm just sourcing for the UK market. I'm just being a connector, just trying to show what's there in the industry, kind of like across Europe, you know, some of the stuff is like further afield as well these days as well. So kind of like as a connector, showing the consumer what's happening in the industry, but also giving more eyes within the industry to see what is happening with different companies. And recently, what was it? I was in Poland at the Green is Life fair a couple of weeks ago. And it's very funny because we've also find this at the Plantarium in the Netherlands.
Right.
Growers don't always know the exciting plants they've got. And it's not always about new genetics. And it's very easy to launch a new plant and kind of put it in the innovation awards and all of this stuff. But it's about recognizing some qualities in stuff they already have. And at the Plantarium, for example, I put together a display of about 50 plants that weren't even in the innovations. And we put together this like sushi belt where the plants went around them. Very cool. And some cool stuff there. But then in Poland, I arrived and they'd given me this area to pull together like unique plants from the show. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't really know the market or the industry. What can I find here? But I found about 45 cool plants there. You know, not always new genetics, but things like there was a black, kind of purple black leaved Sichuan pepper, which was super sexy.
Yeah.
Also, there's a lot of cool like echinacea like breeding there. And also like hot papaya, which is one that was introduced about 20 years ago. It's still looking strong. And it just looked amazing. So I pulled that out as well. Then there was a grower that had, I noticed it as I walked past and I saw this plant. I was like, what is that? And it was like this kind of very light yellow colored flowered hosta.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. So yellow flowered hosta.
Yellow flowered hosta. Okay.
Super cool.
Yeah.
We took like the butter yellow of kind of like a digitalis lutea, for example. Yeah. That sort of yellow. I was like, never seen this before. And they were like, yeah, it's the only yellow flowered hosta. We've been showing it on display for like 15 years. And there's only ever been one garden designer that's looked at it. Because I think I'm used to being so damn nosy that I'm just like, I'm looking at the stand. I'm looking at what's on the trolley. I'm like, like a jackal. And so I saw this yellow flowered hosta. And then I highlighted it because people can forget what cool plants they've got in their realms. And that is the thing. So it's just kind of pulling those out and getting excited about them, really.
It's almost
Get excited about plants.
Yeah.
That's it.
And looking for the next new dahlia, because I suppose dahlias years ago, you know, they fell out of fashion. So
totally.
You can bring something back that people still love but isn't fashionable anymore.
Yeah, it's not always about the new stuff. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, great that you mentioned dahlias because, oh my God, when I was at the Plantarium, did you see the black dahlia?
I saw your... Yes, I saw your
that
place.
Wall of all the different cubes.
But what was so clever of, they got this black dahlia from Poland called Czarny Charakter, which means like black character. And it was just like, and it was just there in the display. It wasn't like they showcased it or anything. Right. So you're looking at this display and there's all these pinks, pastel colours, la, la, la. Then suddenly this black one.
Wow.
And it really is. And you have to watch the video to really see the blackness of it, because it is proper black. It's the black of like Molly Sanderson Viola.
Yes, yeah, you know,
because we got some blacks that are not necessarily
then purple,
blacks.
Aren't they?
But black of that, and the black of a Paul Schera, which is like this black tulip. That's probably the best. Or Nightmare. Nightmare is a good black tulip.
So will this be available to buy next year?
It's really limited, so it's kind of like microprop, that sort of job. But it was just amazing. It's just stuff that's out there just begging to be rediscovered. And
so what's brought you to Glee this year, Michael?
Ooh, la la. Getting excited about plants. I'll wipe my plants. So it's really the future plants display. where I've pulled together about 100 brand new plants, and we've got more plants than we could put on the stand this year,
right,
which is brilliant because it's the third year. So I hope that's a great sign. And yeah, and again, I've pulled together some really cool different plants there with the help of brands that are here at the show, but also ones further afield. I've had some plants that I've had in my car for a couple of weeks I've been picking up around the country. But we've got the El Paso, Shimmers of Paris there. We've got a really cool new pineapple called Baby Boomer.
Okay.
It's got baby pineapples on the pineapple.
Oh,
it's a really awesome plant.
I've got to come
honestly.
And have a proper look.
What else have we got? We've got some really cool conifers because I think the next
really
conifers. There's one called Green Penguin,
okay,
which is super cool. Honestly, you'll love it. Well, we've got some great agastache.
Yeah,
I think lavender should be running scared when it comes to agastache.
Yeah, yeah, I love
pink pearl is a very good perennial type as well.
Okay.
Very sexy. The Salvia Tropicolors as well from Middleton. Mm-hmm. They're very nice, very exotic looking. Some really cool houseplants there too. Oh, some even nice purple anthuriums as well. There's like inspiration in every corner. And there's a new Ami Rose, which is like flowers like
an
a petunia.
Rose. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's like you treat it like a bedding plant, honestly. And it has the most amazing raspberry fragrance.
Ooh.
It changes color from peach through to raspberry as well.
Love it.
Oh, my gosh. So 100 super cool plants of every shape and size. And I love putting it together. I really do. And then we've been doing the tours and, it's just fun.
And you've been talking, is that right? You've been giving some talk?
Yeah, yeah. So I do kind of talk on the stage of 9 different trends.
Right.
And then I take everyone off like the Pied Piper of plants and I've got this black flag, big black flag, and I take everyone down the hall and then we'll go to the future plants display.
Brilliant. So what's the biggest trend that you've highlighted for everybody this year?
Well, gosh, there's 9. It's really,
got time for 9.
Yeah, I mean, I pick out 2 or 3. I've got Go Green or Go Lean, which is really kind of a combination of plants that are more efficient for growers, you know, which is obviously really important. And we forget that. But we also need to keep the consumer happy as well.
Yeah.
So it's also plants that kind of tick that box, but are also more kind of sustainable, better for wildlife, maybe longer flowering, kind of those different sides of the coin there. I'd say houseplants as well. We've got houseplant royalty, which is really houseplants is still a growth
still
area, but
massive,
also flowering houseplants, lots of different kind of dimensions to that. When you do dig into the new, we've got a new Ice Whisper Phalaenopsis, which is an all-white orchid. The moment you see an all-white orchid without any coloured markings, you realise that's pretty cool. Pretty cool. So, and also like, obviously then back into anthuriums, but then Streptocarpus. But also Streptocarpus as a patio plant in the shade.
Right.
Yeah. Because the thing is, we're a bit crazy sometimes. Like, Kate doesn't approve, I can tell.
No,
she's
no,
like,
no.
No.
No,
I like
it.
You like it, yeah?
I've been to Dibley's and it's just mega.
Well, when I was there, I was chatting to them about like, well, because we forget all of these plants. Yeah. They're not house plants.
No.
They're outdoor plants. Yeah. So suddenly we're like, you can grow that outside. And we're like, what? You're crazy. What, you think it was bred to be in a lounge?
Yeah, yeah. No,
you're the crazy one.
No, I put a lot of my houseplants outside this year and they loved it.
Honestly.
Yeah.
So I was talking to Lynn when I was last at Dibley's and I was like, and we saw it at Chelsea this year, didn't we, on the South African display. And like, Streptocarpus, you have them in a woodland area. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So like, and when I was at Thompson Morgan, like doing the trials, like maybe about 15 years ago now, we had a trial with Streptocarpus outdoors. And I remember also being ahead of the time of having Begonia Rex outdoors. And now we've got things like Space Stars that are bred for outdoors.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it's really, I love experimenting. So that's another trend. Also, very proud of this. And I built the trends actually back in January when I did the Plant Catwalk show for Plantline over in the Netherlands.
Amazing,
With 9 different trends. And we had them coming down a conveyor belt. There was like a catwalk and all of this stuff. And the other one is hedges and wedges.
Hedges and wedges.
Which is hedging plants, so new different hedging plants, kind of trying to give alternates to Buxus, but also about maybe hedging that is better for wildlife, few different choices there, but also maybe camellia hedge or magnolia hedge, just thinking a bit differently with hedges, and wedges, which is ground cover.
Right.
So things like ground cover hydrangeas, you know, the Ami Rose as well, basically encouraging people to use living mulch.
Right.
You know, cover the ground, keep the moisture locked in,
stop
the weeds.
Yeah.
You can do that with plants. It doesn't have to be a layer of bark.
Yeah.
You know, makes sense.
I like it. Yeah, it does make sense.
They use that in agriculture all the time, don't they?
Yeah.
Cover crops.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Why make it look pretty?
Yeah. It's amazing. You've just pointed that out, but it makes so much sense.
Cover crops.
Yeah, because I've always said to people, like, you know when you plant some shrubs and they haven't filled out yet for the first few years?
Yeah.
It's like, why not sow hardy annuals around
there?
Yeah,
absolutely.
That is the cover crop. The cover crop of home gardens is hardy annuals.
Oh, well, you see, I am a horticultural expert.
Yeah, that's super
You're
cool.
You're getting there. I might test you on what a streptocarpus is later. Yeah,
but, no, don't do that.
That is really cool, though. That's a good point. Yeah.
So, Michael, your Substack newsletter, Grow This, Not That, blends botanical news, travel, and plant discoveries. How did you decide Substack was the best platform for your voice?
Good question. Before I do that, I just want to interrupt this to give you a compliment, because honestly, when you emailed through the questions, they are the most thoughtful questions ever. Because, you know, I get interviewed by a lot of places and sometimes it's just a very lazy little look through a website, one page, and they kind of like ask you about something that happened 12 years ago or something. But this is really nice, well-researched question. So thank you. It's really amazing. Yeah. Substack, I think, is a real up-and-coming platform.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like a blogging platform. Mm-hmm. It also goes to your readers as a newsletter, which is great because you're not slave to the algorithm. So it goes directly to your readers, which is fab.
Yeah.
I think it's a good platform. You can monetize your content as well. And we should never be shy to monetize our knowledge.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because we do a lot of work to earn it, you know? Yep. So why not? And it's nice. Yeah, I like the way it works. And I'm doing a weekly Hort report, indeed, on a Friday, which is bringing together all the different parts of the industry. Because I feel these days, we can't keep stuff separate anymore because everyone sees everything. Yeah. If you look at Instagram, as businesses, we use Instagram. As consumers, we use Instagram. So kind of B2B also goes B2C, C2C, C2B, blah, 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 blah. It just all crosses over. So I thought, why not bring news together that goes across all of those different parts of the industry? And it does. So there's like commercial news, there's job news, there's kind of what to do in the garden news, there's influencer news, kind of like product of the week, plant of the week, influence of the week, and kind of all those different worlds. So, and then we also do Plants to Grow Now, which goes out on a Wednesday, it's tomorrow actually. Need to get that ready. and also at the weekend, I've started a new interview series called Rooting Around. Which alternates with Beneath the Glass, which is kind of like visits to growers, etc. as well.
I like that.
And it's just an insight into the industry, really. And I'm enjoying kind of interviewing in a written format of interviews. Yeah. So that is, because I feel like, you know, it's great to have a podcast, great to have a video, but also some people like to read stuff as well. So there's different ways that people like to digest stuff. Because I don't know about you, but I would never watch a YouTube video. I can't sit and watch something like that, but I will sit and read something, you know, or listen to something like a podcast. Yeah. But like a video, not necessarily.
I do for things like Tai Chi and yoga.
Okay, yeah. But that's more instructional,
but I'm doing
isn't it?
Yeah,
I guess.
Instructional and how to wire a plug.
Yeah.
So you are putting out a lot of content here. How do you kind of refine and decide what goes out, you know, each week? That's a lot of work. Is it just you? Do you have help with this? Or?
Yeah. Well, I've got like a digital assistant. She'll put together things like Substack, stuff like that. But and also, what she's really great is to bounce ideas off.
Yeah.
Because she's more of a millennial, so.
Okay.
Which is also good. And just kind of sort of things like graphics or this and this. But generally, well, not generally, but everything I post on social media is from me, authentically.
Yeah.
And it's not used in a scheduling program or anything like that. But what I do use is my, iPhone reminders. So I know what I'm going to post when.
Good idea.
The thing is, I always stay so calm in the moment because I know what I'm going to post when. That's the thing. So I'm not sitting here thinking, like, oh my God, I've got to post about this, post about this. Because I probably sit on my, it's probably tomorrow morning, I'm going to put my reel out about Glee. So I'll sort that in the morning.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I'm not like stressing about what to do, sort of thing. So I'm very much like that. And I work with like different brands to put content together for them. And I'm very kind of like transparent. I'll show them a program when we're going to put it out, when. Probably more than they want to know sometimes. So like, for example, I've done a lot of work with Benari, Begonia Breeders in Germany. Right. And I kind of then, we know exactly what's going to go out when. Yeah. So again, I'm not sitting there thinking, when will I get that content out? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. It will remind me, you know, there's probably some for Thursday evening between 5 and 6 that is then, you know, maybe the non-stop series of mm-hmm. video that we prepared, mm-hmm. you know, way back in July. So it's right. kind of, it's quite set in that way. So you can kind of then slot it in and it kind of, it works for me. So I'm never sitting here in the moment stressing. And
right.
and I run the same, no, but I run the same with my to-do list as well. Yeah. Like I got a lot of stuff to do at the minute, but there's nothing I need to do. Great English. There's nothing I need to do. I'm not even going to correct myself until Friday. So I'm here immersed in glee.
You're here in the moment.
I'm immersed in glee in the yep. moment. There are things I need to do. Yeah, I'm a busy mum, but I don't need to do those things till Friday.
Right.
So that's absolutely fine.
Okay. So you're going to enjoy yourself.
And that keeps you calm. Do you know what I mean? And I would really stress that to anyone. Don't do what you need to do before you need to do it. Because we often, and I will never hand in a bit of work early, but okay. I'll also never hand it in late.
Okay.
I do it when I need to do it.
Good and
that
philosophy.
Is probably, yeah, my main tip. Because yeah. then you not haven't got this yeah. forever running list. And it's the iPhone that helps me with that, I have to say. It's the iPhone because it tells me what I need to do when.
And when. Love it.
And it might sound like a big thing to get into, but once you're in the practice of it, it's just there yeah. and it just happens, honestly.
I'm
yeah,
gonna,
it's
I'm
beautiful.
I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah.
Do you never get writer's block, though?
It's just
staring at a white piece of paper and go or blank screen and going, I'm supposed to be doing something.
But then you've got your passion of plants.
No, because then it knows. Yeah, definitely. And also Friday morning, like, you know, I don't want to tell you it's all roses because Friday morning I'll be like, oh, God, this is all the stuff that was waiting. And then all the reminders will come up and I'll be like, oh, yeah. Yes, now is the moment. But no, I don't. Because the other thing that's really interesting about writer's block, let's change that wording to creator's block almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, people give me a product or a plant that I need to come up with something fun to talk about.
Yeah,
me,
yeah, of course.
La, la. But the way, like, and that's why it is great to bounce off my digital assistant, Jen. I'll be kind of like, what's yeah. trending now? What can we yeah, do with yeah. this? La, la. But it's also why I allow myself browsing and, like, don't feel guilty about just looking at social media because that yeah. is how you see what might be trending.
Yeah.
That's how you have an idea that kind of goes into the back of your mind and la, la, la. And I remember, like, an example with Selecta in Germany working with their Pink Kisses Dianthus. And I'd seen, I was making some content and I'd seen, like, maybe during that month, like, an Indonesian plant shop doing something with Kokodama, but they yeah. called okay. it Tanam Dharma
okay.
with more than one plant
yeah.
in. And I was like, oh, I will marry that idea up with what I'm doing with Pink Kisses.
Right.
So then, yeah, so yeah. it was like I saw that inspiration that.
Yeah.
by looking at my phone on the loo. So it works. Yeah.
Oh,
and if
go.
I hadn't been on the loo that day.
You wouldn't have seen it. Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier about your new series, Rooting Around.
Mm.
Can you just tell us a little bit about that and what you're hoping to achieve from that? You know, yeah. what was it? What was the inspiration?
Well, do you know what, Phil? I'm never looking to achieve anything. And I think that's
the... Well, maybe that's where I'm going wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I just want to be happy doing what I do. I just want to enjoy what I'm doing. And I'm never really aiming for something. That's yeah. the thing. I think the minute you're aiming for stuff, you're kind of then judging yourself all the time. Do you know what I mean? You just got to enjoy it. And people digest it in a nice way when you enjoy it. I don't know, because yeah. then you're not trying to be like, oh, I must get this many likes or, yeah. oh, it must be this or that. So I'm quite like, I don't know, like ambivalent almost. But I still enjoy it, yeah. So my main motivation is enjoyment, even above money. But
yeah.
when right. you enjoy it, the money comes because you're not then thinking about it so much. I don't know. So, but anyway, I didn't answer your question. I'm sorry. I was too busy correcting your question.
No.
What was the question? Rooting around, what am I looking to achieve?
Yeah, yeah, what was the inspiration behind it?
Aha, he's changed his question. How cute. So, I think for me, this is a common thing, really. I want to bring together as many parts of the industry as possible because I see that they don't talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Garden designers. Are garden designers here?
No.
Are customers at breeding locations? You know, yeah. It's like they're not, but... Garden designers could be here to see new materials or different ways that yeah. things are trending. Breeders could talk to consumers about what they actually want to grow in their gardens mm-hmm. as well. But very often that is kind of past Chinese whispers through about 10 different yeah. kind of different buyers, growers, agents, all of that. Mm-hmm. So I really see myself as a connector. That really is the thing. And so rooting around, I'm talking like, for example, I just collected up about 9 different pictures of who we talked to already this month. So yeah. Humaira Ikram, do you know her?
Yes.
Amazing designer and connector. And just, I love her whole approach to it as well. Chris Young, talking about what it's like to pitch for editors, because he's obviously working as a publisher.
Yeah.
Then it was Catherine Goldsmith, QVC presenter. What's it like to work in TV shopping kind of world?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that side of things. That then links back through to gardening. And then we've had some interviews with Q as well about the rock garden, the rose garden, and kind of like refreshing those areas. What else did we have? Florist as well.
Yeah.
Like European world-class florist, what it's like to do floristry competitions. So
bring floristry competition you went to.
Yes, the World Cup.
Unbelievable.
It was like a rock concert.
All male final.
I know. Do you know what, Kate? What did you think as a female to that? Because for me, as a male who has grown up constantly being mocked for loving plants and feeling like I was less because of it, that sang to my heart.
I bet.
Yeah, it really did.
It's interesting because sometimes I've always thought of floristry a bit like with cooking, like women are the cooks, men are the chefs.
Okay.
Women are the home gardeners, but men have tended to be the floristry elite.
Okay.
So I've always seen floristry being a little bit dominated by men. So I was quite interested by what you've seen. Maybe I'm just thinking of...
Simon Lysett,
That's it, Simon Lysett.
Yeah.
I often see him and I can't remember another guy. So I've always thought it's quite male-dominated.
Really?
In the top.
Yeah.
You know, so... But obviously...
Once you tap into a world, you don't... But no, it's just there for me. It was really like, that feels nice.
Yeah. I get it. Yeah.
That was cool, though. But yeah, that is what we're doing with rooting around, I would say.
So you have recently announced that you're getting over 1 million views per week on Instagram. Mm-hmm. What type of content seems to resonate the most on your platform?
Oh, hydrangeas. I might as well just post about hydrangeas all week. It's crazy, isn't it? Yeah.
They are so popular now, aren't they?
It really is.
Who doesn't love a hydrangea?
But do you know what? Like I've said earlier, I'm never... That was a nice figure to like, because every so often when you got a cool figure like that, like I think on Substack, I've set a reminder to talk about it next week, but like I'm like apparently doing well with the paid subscribers. That's a good percentage of what I do.
Okay.
And it pops up and it tells you that. So I feel like I'm never afraid to kind of just tell people something. I don't know if that's boasting or not. I try and detach myself from it.
Right.
But you got to tell people, especially in a LinkedIn atmosphere. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely.
So yeah, so that's why I post about like the million. But it's never necessarily chasing that. And I'm always authentic to what content I want to put out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I don't get terribly good engagement compared to like some of the influencers who are more engaged in But I do a lot of real life stuff as well. Yeah. And it's kind of, social media has always been my portfolio anyway.
Yeah.
And not something where I'm looking to get that engagement. So it was nice to see that. And that's obviously in response to the varied content that I do as well. So
Maybe you need to do more dancing in your pants if you want to get more engagement.
Oh, la, la.
Is that what you're thinking of doing for the underground?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. Is that a request?
So you're creating content for Instagram and does that feed back into your Substack and vice versa? Do you get that crossover and cross-pollination between the two?
That's really interesting because I don't know about you, but I find cross-pollination is hard work and your followers are happy where they're happy.
Yeah.
My example is really probably QVC customers who tend to be also the Facebook followers. If I've ever encouraged them to listen to a podcast, they ain't interested for toffee.
Really?
Not even for fudge. No.
Interesting.
Yeah. Honestly, it's really interesting. So you need to interact with your followers and consumers where they are.
Yeah.
You can't move people around.
Okay.
That is really the key thing. So where they are. So yeah, I do a bit of cross-pollination in that way, but it's strongest where it originates, really. Yeah. I think Substack is maybe a little bit exception because it is a new platform. So then people are a little bit intrigued and maybe come across there. And that is the one thing you would kind of cross-pollinate from the other platforms, I would say, but almost like coming out of another platform to Substack, not necessarily the other direction, if you know what I mean. So, great question. Thank you.
So you are deeply embedded in horticultural media, trade shows, plant development, education. Where have you got any plan? I know you don't really plan. But where do you see this all taking you next?
I don't know. I got no idea.
I said no plan.
No, not really. Because that's...
Just go with it.
I don't know. That's how you stay dynamic and you just follow your nose and...
Is there anything that
I'm like
you
the
haven't
worst
done?
Careers advisor ever, sorry.
But is there anything in this kind of world that you haven't done or you haven't been that you would like to do
I don't really think like that.
No?
I don't know. I feel like such a genetic blip sometimes. I would say, I mean, I like there's been a natural pivot into industry work.
Right.
And that, I guess if you were going to, if another question is like, you know, who do you see as competitors or who do you admire? I'd say no one because I'm kind of like just carving my own path. And I think that's probably why I don't have this master plan because I don't compare myself to anyone else because I then just do what feels right and what I want to do rather than what I'm expected to do or someone then you do this and it's like, oh, but they're doing that. Think of that. So I just don't look at what people are up to. Do you know what I mean? So I just follow my nose on it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And that is, and that's the way I really continue. But having said that, it's been... And sometimes, like I said, with the plant promotion thing, you don't always realize where you've got to until you've got there. Mm-hmm. And that's where I was like, oh, I'm a plant promoter. That makes sense. So this kind of pivot into the industry has been, I really like that kind of doing more industry level work.
Yeah.
Because, it does set you apart, which is kind of obviously an important element. But also, it's interesting and I can share that with the consumer because not many people have got that look behind the curtain, as it were.
No, not at all.
So that is pretty cool. But also, I mean, even recently, like this little pivot into floristry is quite interesting. Mm-hmm. It's a world I know nothing about, but there's a lot to discover.
Yeah.
But again, kind of, I won't push myself into it. No. If I'm pulled into it, I'll let that happen. But I won't push in. And I always feel like if you allow yourself to be pulled rather than pushed, then you know you're there for the right reasons.
Yeah.
And you also know that then the people that have got you there have got you for the right reasons and not because you pushed into it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I tend to let things have the pull factor rather
organic.
Than the push. Yeah, and also, you know, I'm very lucky that a lot of companies like, for example, Plantline, doing the plant catwalk show earlier this year, it's like they wanted to do an event and I suggested the plant catwalk show, la, la, la. And so that was fab because then I was able to do something very different and distinctive, but under the very safe umbrella of a company working with. So I'm quite lucky to do that. But of course, they entrust a lot in me to do that and not screw it up at the same time.
Absolutely.
So I find that that's a nice way to kind of delve into new projects as well, kind of as partnerships almost. Yeah.
Have you ever discovered a plant that you've absolutely fallen in love with? Maybe it's like the holy grail of
every
plants.
Day, Phil.
But it's proved to be a total flop.
Oh, no, not every day. such a good question.
Have you ever tried to really push some things? This is the next best thing, and it's just not happening.
I think the hard sell, I'm going to answer in a slightly different way, but the hard sell is conifers in a way. Because the minute you say they're conifers, it's weird. Because we had this Cryptomeria Chiara Gold at the weekend when I was doing these presentations at Bailey's of Wisto Garden Centre near Leicester.
Right.
And as explained this Chiara Gold, we had it on stage. I'm like, it's lovely, twisted, la la la. It was great, you know, tree, la la la. And I was like, yes, it's such a fantastic conifer. And there was like, and this lady in the audience, she was like, oh, I liked it until you said conifer. What do you mean? You liked everything else about it. It doesn't matter what it is. Do you know what I mean?
The label shouldn't matter.
So I might be caught with my pants down on this El Paso. Who knows?
Oh, right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay.
It's really hard to answer that question because so many plants have come and go over the years.
Yeah.
I kind of answer it in a roundabout way of like what plants haven't kicked off that I thought would.
Yeah.
I can't believe we don't grow more Hemerocallis.
Okay.
I don't know what that is.
Daylily.
Okay. Daylily.
So many available. You've got ones that will flower pretty long time. Yeah. Continuous blooms, 500 flowers. They're a tough grassy plant, which is very... weatherproof, pet-proof as well.
The structure.
Yeah, so I'm amazed that they've never kind of kicked off a bit bigger, to be honest. I don't know, because it's hard, because then I see the reasons why they don't. But like, chrysanthemums, I really want them to have the revival in the same way as dahlias.
Yeah.
But then they're quite complex, different ways to grow them, different styles. I guess dahlias, they all fit into the same kind of regime in a way. So, yeah, I feel similar about gladioli, but we need a multi-branching one, don't we?
I love gladioli.
But it's not much payback, is it? But
no.
That's, I think we got a problem sometimes with, like, we expect so much from plants, don't we? Especially in UK. It's different in different... especially in the Netherlands, they're happy to throw a plant away at the end of the season.
Really?
That's not a big problem to them. A plant is better, you know, composted than it is, you know, in a bin. Put it that way.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It's dying in your border and you...
Yeah, definitely.
Stop gardening.
So I say that, plants that I feel have never had the big woo that they deserve yet.
Right. So. Excellent.
Yes.
Michael, we're going to wrap things up now. So have you got any final thoughts or hopes for the rest of your time here at Glee?
Ooh la la. I don't know. I just love it. I love walking around, looking at new products. I don't like limit myself to where I wander as well, because you never know what inspiration you're going to see. It's incredible. Of course, I'm not a furniture expert, but who knows what you're going to see there? And and the ideas that spark, I think we close our minds too much sometimes, but just look at everything. You never know what idea you're going to have. And also, share your ideas, get them out there in the ether. Do you know what I mean? Because if the idea happens, whether I did it or not, I haven't got time to do all my ideas, you know? So just share with people, you know, just chat to people, be open. That's the thing. And they'll be open in return. And that's it really. Yeah.
Lovely.
Just have a nice time. Put that on a t-shirt.
Just have a nice time. That should be my motto for life.
I wet my plants.
Well, listen, thank you so much, Michael, for coming to talk to us today.
No worries.
It's been
thank
really
you
lovely
End
chat.
Of a long day.
Oh, that was lovely. Thank you.
I'm here with Joe Denham from Gardenex. Joe, can you just give us a little bit of information about what Gardenex actually is?
Absolutely. We are a federation that helps British garden businesses to export. So for Glee in particular, we've had a long-standing relationship where we bring in international buyers and we run a series of Meet the Buyer presentations here. So our members can come to the stand, to the booth, and meet overseas buyers. It's been really successful. Glee have been extremely supportive. We've had a relationship with them going back many, many years. And we just help British businesses to export. That's what we do.
Okay, that sounds really interesting. So how are things going this year at Glee?
Excellent. We've had a really good response to our Meet the Buyer events. They're full, absolutely full. We've heard some great deals going on between the buyers and the sellers, and that's what we're here for. So it's been really, really successful.
Right. And are there any particular markets that you're focusing on? Is it like European or the States or, you know?
It's all markets. We organise exhibitions in the British pavilions abroad at shows like GAFA and used to be National Hardware Show in America, all over. And we obviously look after gardening businesses. And the other side of our federation, we look after pet businesses with PetQuip. So we do pet shows and, again, organise those British pavilions abroad as well.
So Glee and garden centres in general are so much more than just gardening nowadays. So do you cover the whole gamut of what's sold in a garden centre, or do you really focus in on the garden care products?
Normally our members are, you know, traditionally solidly in the garden sundries area. So it might be anybody from Bergen and Ball down, who across the whole gamut of product ranges. We also run the CHA, the Commercial Horticultural Association, for agritech type products as well. So we span a whole range of product categories, if you like.
And is there a particular size of business that you would say you work with? Or is it, I mean, because there are an awful lot of like startups and little companies here. Are they the sorts of businesses that you'd be happy to talk to?
Oh, 100%. I mean, we are really, really very good. We used to run the tap grant system to help them get grants from the government to just dip their toe in exporting. It's the early starters, the people who've never exported before but want to know first steps and which shows to do and just get that advice. We can support them and do that. But we also have obviously major members. And in fact, we have a patron package that some of the bigger companies within our industry will pay a little bit more to us to replace our old government funding. So we have Autopot and VegTrug have come on board just to So they are showing that they're helping smaller startup businesses in the category to export. So it's all about helping British business, and it doesn't matter what the size is.
That sounds fantastic. Well, just like to wish you all the best for the rest of the show, and good luck.
Thank you very much. Nice to speak to you.
We're joined here by Paul Oliver from Urban Nature Store in Canada.
I'm so happy to be here, and both on the broadcast as well as at the show. It's been fabulous so far.
Lovely. Welcome.
So, Paul, why don't we start with you telling us what's brought you to Glee this year?
I love to go to trade shows because they actually give us the insights as to new products. We're always looking for innovative new products for our customers, things that will address customer needs, or even a lot of things that customers never thought were possible that we can actually put in front of them in our stores. This year we came to Glee because we're actually refocusing our buying patterns away from the United States. There's someone in Washington that keeps saying he wants to take over Canada. And I can tell you, our Canadian customers are looking for new international supply chains and new products from elsewhere in the world.
Right.
Absolutely.
And the world's getting smaller, and so we can bring in a lot of new products easily and efficiently from anywhere in the world. And UK, being a former colony of the UK, we're very familiar with things in here.
Brilliant. So what would success at Glee look like to you, Paul? New contacts, new suppliers, new clients?
A combination of a lot of things. Finding new products, definitely.
Right.
Finding new reliable supply chain partners that we can work with, whether they're based in the UK or they're based elsewhere in the world, that we can turn to and say, well, even if we have a new product we want to develop, and we can find a supplier that will work with us to help develop it as part of that. But also it's just going and seeing how things are displayed. We're so used to, in Canada, mimicking U.S. retailing.
Okay.
But we've got such a global population in Toronto and in Canada that how you market in the UK, how you display things. Even one of the things, in addition to going to the show here, I love to go to retail stores. I love to walk grocery stores, see how products are being displayed, how customers are being served, how they're interacting with customers, to provide that new innovation in Canada. Because we have fallen into a little bit of that trap of just mimicking U.S. companies.
Okay.
So far we've met lots of new suppliers and potential suppliers here at the show, and this is the first day. So we've only made it a small part way through the show.
You're here for all 3 days?
Yes, we're here for all 3 days.
All right, fantastic. So, I mean, you mentioned there that you're here, it's the first day, and we're only partway through the afternoon. But can you give us your first impressions of the show, and how does it compare with like the events in North America?
So far, I found much more diverse exhibitors.
Okay.
At the show here, and in it, like even the area where they're actually talking about food in garden centers. Mm-hmm. Most of the time when you go to a trade show in North America, it's dry goods or it's hard goods or it's this.
Right.
It's fertilizers. Yeah. And very few that actually talk about the customer experience.
Okay.
There are several exhibitors here that are displaying greeting cards and socks and food.
Yeah, giftware.
And that's one of the things that the Urban Nature Store we try to really focus on is people come to our stores on a regular basis to buy birdseed. That's their regular thing, sort of back the old equation that you sell them the razor because they're going to keep buying the blades. We get them buying the birdseed, but they come into the store every week or every 2 weeks, adding kids' toys, adding socks, adding books, adding a whole bunch of these other things that people say, hey, what a great idea. And when you walk around Glee, you're actually seeing a whole bunch of things. You're saying, hey, what a great idea. I never thought of doing that.
That's brilliant.
And that's where the most obvious thing I've seen here at Glee is that integration of it's not just a gardening show. It's not just gardening products.
Not at all.
Everything that you could put into a garden center and stuff that you would never have thought of putting in a garden center.
I mean, I think that's something that's happened over the last few years. The garden centres have, through necessity, really had to diversify and become destinations in their own right. And I think this show is testament to that.
Especially food. You never would have seen food here before. And even it is still quite a small percentage of what is on the show, but it's so important now in garden centres.
Yeah. Who would have thought there'd be three or four different exhibitors showcasing coffee? because it's part of that lifestyle. People aren't going out. If they just want a shovel, they can go online and order it. Mm-hmm. If they're going to a garden center or a birding store or any type of specialty store, they're looking for an experience. They're Absolutely. Looking to see new things. They're looking to see how products go together. And one of the things we're finding is because we're a smaller store, there are lots of people that are buying gifts that want to come in because it's not a big store. They don't want to be overwhelmed by going aisle after aisle after aisle. They like to go to smaller stores, be able to browse. It's more interactive. Mm-hmm. They can pick up products. They can see it out of the box. The small supplier sector here is so active. Like it's cosmetics, it's lotions, it's all the things that small stores can sell while they're selling a bag of soil or while they're selling a bag of birdseed.
So tell us a little bit about the Natural Urban, is that the right name? Urban Nature Store. So it's in Canada. So obviously most of our listeners probably won't be too aware of you. So just tell us a little bit about the business.
Well, as we say, we're sort of the Canada's birding store.
Okay.
We're based in Toronto. And we have stores around Ontario. We started about 22 years ago or so. And our core product is birdseed. We go through a tractor trailer or tractor trailer and a half a week of birdseed.
Wow.
We sell a lot of it.
A lot of it.
But one of the things that we actually do is really promote additional things. So when people come into the store, they can actually, for our Christmas time, we actually promote it as nature-inspired gifts for every generation. Mm-hmm. So whether you're buying for grandpa or the newborn, mm-hmm. there's something that's nature-inspired, and it's jewelry, and it's birding products, and it's binoculars, and it's books, and it's educational, it's interactive toys for kids. So it's a little bit for everyone. Generally, what we find is people that are interested in birding and in gardening mm-hmm. are interested in nature. They're interested in getting their grandchildren off their iPads and actually interacting. One of the most popular things that we sell are kits that grandparents can build with their kids, building a birdhouse, decorating the birdhouse.
Yeah, nice.
And the kids are great because all of a sudden they build something, they put a bird feeder out, and 10 minutes later, they see birds using it.
Yeah.
It's not like some game they're playing on Game Boy type of thing. Dating myself with Game Boy. it's that interaction with nature. And like one of nature guides where kids go out and they can identify animals and identify birds. And they compete with their brothers and sisters. Oh, I saw a robin. Oh, I saw two sparrows and different things like that. So
fantastic. So what makes the Canadian customer unique? So when it comes to garden and wildlife products, is there something that they're looking for that maybe you don't see elsewhere?
I think it's the ethnic diversity of the Canadian consumer. And this is the thing, as we've stepped back as a company to try to re-examine what we're delivering to customers, the United States is much more of a homogeneous society where everyone sort of matches and conforms.
Right.
In Canada, we promote the multicultural heritage where people, whether they're from India, Thailand, Japan, Europe, UK, mm-hmm. they've come to Canada. They have different expectations in retail. They have different goals. So one of the things traditionally, wild birding in Canada has been looked at as it's a traditional Northern European background and people that are into. Mm-hmm. But what we found particular coming out of COVID is when people were locked down into COVID, all of a sudden people that hadn't really spent a lot of time looking out their window notice that in their backyard they've got birds. Yeah, oh, and they've got the bright yellow birds, and they've got robins, and they've got blue jays. And then all of a sudden they want to explore, how do I interact with them? Yep. Do they all eat the same thing? Do they all feed at the same feeder? And so as we were coming out of COVID, we were noticing a much more ethnically diverse composition visually of our customers. And it was just that the hobby or the birding in general had expanded so much.
Yeah.
Even I spent a lot of time speaking to gardening societies. And I've done this for 20 years, talking about birding and how it interacts with gardening. And the one thing I've noticed is it's changed from an older white woman hobby to it's got a lot more men involved in it. And it's got a lot more younger people involved in it. And it's got a much more ethnically diverse group out there. And that's one of the things I find in Canada is that we're marketing to a much wider and broader potential clientele. And and our traditional old marketing things were just, oh, this is the group that's interested in birding, not what group will be interested in birding tomorrow.
Right.
And so has that changed the way you speak to, you know, you're presenting yourselves?
Yes. Yeah. So what we, and that's partly of, well, someone may be interested in birding, but not have the room to put a feeder out, but but they're interested in buying a pair of binoculars and going out hiking, or just a bird guide so they can identify the birds that they're out there, or so more things. It's not just bird seed and bird feeders that we sell.
Yeah.
And what I always find is when customers walk into their store and say, oh, I came here to buy bird. Oh my God, I didn't know you had all these things. Wow, this is really interesting. And even so, I made the comment earlier about kids playing on their iPhone.
Yeah.
But part of it is, well, that's how kids learn. So the Merlin app, that it helps you identify birds by just listening to the sound.
Yeah, I have that on my phone.
And it's a great way. That's the first step into it. And then once they do that, then they want a pair of binoculars so that they can spot the bird easier. And then they want hiking boots, and they want hiking gear and that. And so everyone has a different pathway into wild birding. And I think going back 20 years ago or 25 years when we founded the company, it was, well, we just need to sell to people that are birders. We need to sell today to tomorrow's birders as well. And that's the biggest marketing change I've noticed in the last, since COVID, but also just in observing the industry.
It's interesting. UK, we don't call it birding, but anyway, the demographic is definitely white male.
Definitely, but those that go out to photograph and out in the field.
Or the twitches.
Maybe people at home in their back gardens. I think that's more that could well be more gender balanced.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah, and that's part of the. It is we sort of say those that like to go out in the field and watch birds are men. Right. Those that feed at home are female.
That's true.
But one of the things that we've actually noticed. One of the trends that we focus on is with people retiring earlier, living longer and being healthier and much more active, it's become very much a couple's activity to both maintain the bird feeder and make sure it's filled so that when the robin shows up, there's food but also going into the field. And so we get a lot of couples that come in and it's their joint purchase together and they're both buying a pair of binoculars. But they have different expectation. He's looking for a powerful one. He's doesn't care about the weight. She's looking for a more
lightweight
one because she knows after walking 5 kilometers, she doesn't want to be carrying the heavy thing. So it's trying to offer a wider range because everyone is at a different point on that journey of birding.
So are there any trends or customer shifts that are driving demand for new products?
People always want something new, and our high tech industry is the newest iPhone
Chinese.
Or the shiniest, the newest iPhone, and that. So people expect that. basically, if you get a good feeder, you don't need to change it.
Right.
but people want to change it, yep, because they want to get specialized. They want to get finches as opposed to just chickadees,
robins, yeah.
or robins. So there is a segment of the market that is always looking for something that's new and bright and shiny.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to deliver that to them. But we also want to make sure that our traditional customers that expect high-quality, fresh birdseed can come in and get high-quality, fresh birdseed. But the other thing that we've noticed in Canada, in particular in the Toronto market, is the expectation of size differences.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're buying a bag of birdseed, some people want to buy a 50-pound bag and they can go through it pretty quickly, mm-hmm, or they live in the suburbs and they've got lots of room for it.
Right.
As we've gotten younger customers that may be living in condominiums or apartments, yeah, or smaller flats, they're looking to come more frequently, but smaller bags. And sometimes they like to just get the smaller bag because it means they come more frequently and they interact, okay, with them. And so one of the promotions that we've started at the store is a Seniors Day once a month.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a Seniors Day for anyone that likes birding.
Right.
So no age limit on it. And it's refreshments we put out. And what we find is people like to come to that just to meet other birders. And they like that interaction. And because a lot of times their social activities are, mm-hmm, social media, they don't interact with people, yeah, right, directly. So we've been adding walks where at this local store, the Kingston store, they have a walk and they may get 25 people out and yeah, it's a way for them. Oh, hey, I didn't know you were into birding. Oh, mm-hmm, and that they're looking at it more as a social interaction activity.
Yeah, so it's community building.
It's the community building, yes.
Excellent. You're saying that people are looking for newness and things like that. You're here looking for innovation. Is there anything that's caught your eye since you've been here? I know it's still the first day. But...
There are lots of things. Some of it is new products. Some of it's a better way of explaining products.
Okay, that's always good.
And sometimes it's just rethinking products to make, yeah, them easier to clean a feeder, or to keep it healthier for a bird. Recycled plastic bird houses that have liners in them that you can take out every season.
Yeah, yeah.
You then don't need to worry about bacteria, yeah, or, mm-hmm, or disease or anything like that. So a variety of taking basic things, mm-hmm, and making them more interactive or easier for the customer, instead of having to get out a whole bunch of detergent to, yes, clean their birdhouse. They're able to just take the liner out and away they go.
So have you seen a difference between the products on show here in the UK and back home?
Some differences. Probably the biggest difference I see here is a much more awareness of impact on the environment.
Okay, so sustainability.
The sustainability and the products that are rated with sustainability. I was at a seminar earlier where people were presenting products.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions that kept popping up, well, is the wood certified?
Right.
Is it? And that, at very few shows in North America do those questions
really
come forward. They're starting to, but you're probably 10 years before,
oh my goodness,
where the consumer is on. The consumer wants to know this.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the consumer understands it. Sometimes they don't understand it, but they're relying on the retailer to make sure,
yeah,
that they're not,
right,
greenwashing the certification, yep, or that, but that, yep, it's a legitimate organization that has done it, and it helps them feel good about it.
Yeah.
In particular, in a field like gardening, where your customer is very in tune with the environment, it's an important step. And so that's probably the biggest thing that I noticed between Glee and other shows that I've been to.
Okay, that's interesting.
So, Paul, can you give us your top tip for what people at home can do to help wild birds?
Feed them.
As simple as that.
Yeah, there are lots of things they can do, but because we have such a big migration of birds, mm-hmm, at this time of the year,
yeah,
I always keep reminding people to make sure if they've got a feeder out there, It's full and it's got lots of fatty foods. They're not going to Jenny Craig at this time of the year. They're trying to fatten up for the winter, to overwinter or to migrate, and to use good quality bird seed. There's nothing worse than putting a whole bunch of fillers into the bird seed because it looks like the feeder or the bag is full, whereas the bird's getting very little nutrients out of it. Spend a bit more, put out good quality food, and you'll get a lot more birds. We do it for two reasons. We feed birds to help the bird, and we also feed birds because it makes us feel good. It makes us feel good that we're helping the birds. It makes us feel good that we're relaxing, enjoying them. I say there's nothing better than on a wintry day, sitting in your front window or your kitchen window, staring out, watching three or four birds eat the food, and help them, help themselves. It's relaxing. And I think during COVID, that was what people found. It was a very good way to interact and get out of the home, go out, walk in a park, watch the birds, listen to the birds.
Yeah. We have the RSPB in the UK does a big garden bird watch where everyone watches birds over a weekend and marks how many so they can keep an eye on the population. Do you have anything like that?
Yes. We have the Audubon Society through Cornell University. They co-sponsor it, but it's to a bird count.
Right.
And they do it in the fall, they do one in the spring, and then they also do one over the Christmas holidays. And it's a great activity for people to do,
together.
But it's even a better one for families to do because the kids can become pretty competitive.
Yes.
And I counted more birds than you did.
Yeah, I get that one. So you mentioned diversifying away from U.S. suppliers, and we did speak a little bit about the reasons. How is that shaping your current sourcing strategy?
Well, we've taken a very, very active role in diversifying our suppliers. Traditionally, what we found was because there was very little border issues between Canada and the U.S., a lot of distributors, whether they're making the product in the U.S. or bringing it in from abroad, they were landing it in the U.S. and supplying Canada and Mexico from that. But now when they're landing that product and they're paying a 25 or 35 or 40 or 50% tariff, depending on whether someone's in a good mood that day or not, that cost get passed on to us. And so we're working with suppliers that we have now that will land product directly into Canada. And then the next step we're doing is actually reaching out and working with suppliers where we'll actually bring the product to Canada.
Right.
And so one of the things we're doing is adding a little bit more warehouse space to our Toronto location so that we can actually bring larger shipments in. We can actually process the product, store a bit more there. And working with logistics companies, whether they're bringing product through Liverpool here into Canada for us or through different ports in China. And so even some of the suppliers we're talking to here at the show that bring product globally to England, we're talking to them about, okay, well, we'll pick it up wherever your factory is and bring it straight to Canada. It reduces the tariffs and one of the feedback we've gotten from customers is that the president in the United States around the world isn't overly popular in most places. In Canada, when he keeps talking about taking over Canada as his 51st state, we can't sell a lot of American products because of the blowback from Canadian consumers.
Yeah.
They're outraged. It's sort of like going through a divorce that's really, really messy.
Yeah.
You were together for so many years, and then all of a sudden, one partner says, oh, they're tired of you.
Yeah.
And so we get a lot of questions of what products are not
American.
Yeah. And so we've tackled it two ways. One, we've worked with a lot of small manufacturers in Canada to make products that custom make them for us that we've been able to substitute products for. And then we're also at shows like Glee, looking for global partners that will be reliable. And a lot of our suppliers that we work with in the U.S. are wonderful people themselves. Mm-hmm. Mm. But they don't know whether they're going to be hit with a 50% tariff or a 25% tariff.
Yeah.
They're panicking as much as we are. But by working with a partner in the U.K., where we have a Canadian-U.K. free trade agreement, we know what the certainty is there. We're dealing with adults in the room that know exactly what it's going to be in 10 years. So you can plan next year's buying. You can plan 5 years buying out. You can't do that with the uncertainty in the trade situation right now, dealing with the our partner south of the border.
So there's definitely an opportunity there. What can UK or European businesses do to help fill that gap, do you think?
Probably the biggest thing would be actually identifying supply chains that Canadian suppliers or customers know the certainty of it's going to be this cost, 10% shipping or 5% shipping or whatever it is, or that they already have figured out a reliable supply chain.
Yep.
Partly because of my background, have a pretty good idea on how to do that. Some of our other supply chain issues over the years, I've developed some expertise in that field. So I'm able to do that. A lot of my other business colleagues that I talk to, whether it's in the lawn and garden business or in other retail businesses, don't know how to do that. So they're sitting in Toronto and they're saying, we'd love to find a new supplier in Europe or a new supplier in the UK, but I don't even know how to get the product from there to here.
Yeah.
And so UK suppliers that develop that expertise, or say we have a pathway or we know the exact way to do that, or we can ship it and it lands in Toronto in 5 days, you can do that. Like we started doing this with one of the UK companies, Hawk Optics.
Right.
It was the first time we had actually started buying good volume of a highly an expensive product.
Right.
And that relationship has worked out fabulous. We can place the order. It's in our warehouse in 48 hours. So we can restock quicker now than we can from some of our U.S. Optics suppliers. But that was because Hawk had decided they were going to figure out how to do it. And they came to us and they said, we know how to do it. And we said, great, we want to buy your product.
So in the UK, every year, the robin is voted as their favorite, as our favorite bird. Do you have that in Canada? Is there a favorite bird?
We have a national bird.
Yeah.
And that one of the most popular ones is the loon. And that's Ontario. Because
can you describe that for me?
It's a water bird, but he has a very, very unique call. So anyone that goes to cottage country in Canada is familiar with a loon because he'll be out there early in the morning when the haze is still over the lake, howling away. But probably our most popular in southern
bird,
is a cardinal. Because he's bright, he's red, and he stays for the winter. And there's nothing better than seeing him on a background of white snow on a birch tree with no leaves and two of them sitting up there enjoying.
So they'll be on your Christmas cards. We have robins on Christmas cards. So in Canada, you'll see the cardinal.
You'll see a cardinal on almost every Christmas card that's a bird featured.
Like our robin. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Paul.
It's been my pleasure.
Thank you, Paul. Really appreciate your time.
Please do subscribe, like, and review us on your podcast platform of choice. It only takes a moment, and it helps us to make this podcast possible. If you found the episode useful, do spread the word and share it with your colleagues. Signing up to our mailing list at theunderground.fm will mean that you'll receive insights and news all about new episodes straight to your inbox. The Underground Podcast is produced by Wright O'Bara, a creative marketing agency for home and garden brands. The production at Glee doesn't happen without a team of people behind it. So my thanks goes to Matt Meehan and Katerina Albanese from the Glee team for their help and assistance. Technical production was by Paul Withers, and their production assistant was Josh Wright. On-site videography was by Ben Holmes, and graphic design and marketing support was by Claire Appleby. The podcast booth was constructed with the support of Toby Noyce of Extreme Graphics. And of course, my thanks goes to my brilliant co-host, Kate Turner, the Gardener Guru. Thanks for listening.